So we have with us this afternoon Terrence Nichols, who is pastor of New Hope Community Church in Vallejo, California, who will be our Sunday night plenary speaker. And also Saul Cruz, he and his wife minister in rural and urban areas of Mexico through Armonia Ministries. And we heard him last night as one of our Friday evening plenary speakers. Feel free to make an opening statement and talk about a little bit about why you're here, what you're concerned about, and how Urbana addresses that, and then we'll open it up for questions.
My name is Terrence Nichols, and I am the church plant director there in Vallejo, California. And it is exciting to be here as a part of Urbana, because the Lord has always placed multicultural ministries as a heart of my journey. And I've been a pastor in an established church that changed into a multicultural church, and then also recently planted a church that is intentionally multicultural. So as an outsider to Urbana, coming from a Christian Missionary Alliance standpoint, I'm looking at Urbana and InterVarsity, and you guys are, Urbana and InterVarsity is ahead of the curve. I see intentional multiculturalism and multi-ethnicity. I see it in the power structure and in the power base and the decision makers. You see it in the public worship services, and that is extremely exciting that we are training a generation of multicultural students.
Thank you, Terrence. My name is Saul Cruz, and I come from Mexico. I'm in Urbana because I believe that it's in our student years when we can develop this idea that the gospel, the proclamation of the gospel, should go always hand in hand with the demonstration of it. And it can be a very natural thing to learn to speak about what we believe and also to do what we believe. And that's how it happened in our lives. And my wife and I, together with many other Christian students, we learned to help people since we were students, like people who didn't know how to read and write, who needed better nourishment in their families. We've identified with medical students communities with tuberculosis who didn't have enough good treatment, so we would find the drugs, appropriate drugs to take to them, what they needed, and also to improve their nourishment, etc. So that became a lifestyle, a way of being. And when you become a professional, you don't see that you can live in a different way, you see. And so after about 10 years of marriage, we decided that all the experiences that we have had were enough to start something of our own in some of the worst places that we have been to, like the biggest garbage dump south of the U.S., you see, which was very close to the downtown area of Mexico City. And today, with more than 20 years of experience, this has become a worldwide movement of people committed to the poor. Yeah, our aim is to transform together. See, together, transform poverty into life, an abundant life, a dignified life, a life that can show that our faith can really transform living conditions and bring people into a good life.
Questions?
Yes.
You can identify yourself also.
The church that I pastored in San Francisco was a traditionally Caucasian church. When I first walked in, I saw 12 Italian ladies in their 60s. And they were the backbone of that church. And it is very difficult for Caucasians in the sense that they have never had to compromise their understanding and their culture for other cultures. One lady came to me, we did symposiums where we simply discussed these issues, and one lady came to me and she said, you know, I've always prided myself in being in good relationships with my coworkers who are other ethnicities other than I. She said, but then I thought about it, but I've never worked for anyone other than, you know, I've always been the boss. I've always been in charge. I've never worked for a person of another ethnicity. So if you bring those professional experiences and those life experiences into the church, it can be extremely difficult for Caucasians to be able to grasp the attitude and the ideology and the spiritual impact of multiculturalism. I think that it is easier. I will speak from that of an African-American perspective, since I know a little bit about that. It is easier for African-Americans to be able to do that because we've always had to do that. We've always lived in a world that was not dominated by us, and we've always had to work in a society and adjust in a society and at the same time stay true to who we were culturally. And so you will have African-Americans, even though they may not speak a different language, they do speak another language at home. We call it Ebonics. So we learn a cultural language of the business world, and then you speak another cultural language at home. And we've always lived in those two worlds. But I think it is difficult for all men in a sin world to live in a multicultural world, because you are giving up a lot of your comforts. You're giving up a lot of things that are even in all black church that are simply cultural and not necessarily biblical. And so it becomes very difficult. In all fairness, the black church still today in many areas is proud to be the black church. They know how to do that, and they're not willing in many cases to be a multicultural church. So it's a very difficult thing for a lot of Christians to grasp. Yes?
Yeah, that's a question for both of you.
Yes.
One of the themes that's come out of Urbana for me is this compassionate activism.
Yes.
Embodied in Bono's plea last night. And I think about the challenge between, as trying to bring together Billy Graham's commitment to world evangelization and Dr. King's vision for beloved community through justice for the poor and racial reconciliation. What I'm wondering is, what biblical metaphors can we use to help translate evangelism and justice to white America from the African American and Latino American freedom struggles in order that white Americans can deal with white privilege at a level that we can listen and learn here in our churches versus like going to Africa and solve AIDS in Africa? I mean, I think we all need to go. But how can we do that in our church life here?
Yes. Can I start?
Sure.
You just made me think of Jesus. I think we need to go back to Jesus. And just to the original behavior of Jesus. We observe him, for instance, in Matthew 4 and then in Matthew 9, we find him visiting all towns and villages. And we see him preaching, teaching, and healing in perfect balance. We don't see him unbalanced or giving preference to the verbal contents of the gospel. You see, he does everything. He is looking after the spiritual problems of people through his preaching. He's looking after the psychological and mental needs of his people through his teaching. And he's looking after the physical problems of his people through his healing and through his constant service. Now, he recruits a number of disciples. He teaches them. And by Matthew 9, he's doing the same. He's still teaching, he's still preaching, and he's still healing. But he says the harvest is plentiful and the workers are few. So he sends them out in Matthew 10, teaching them, sending them to do exactly the same, teaching, preaching, and healing. I think that we need to re-listen to these fundamental, basic stories of the Bible, narratives of the Gospels, to remind us that that's what really Jesus wanted us as his disciples. Because somehow, because of politics, because of convenience, because of comfort, whatever reasons there are, we have biased ourselves into some activities which are more natural to us, but who do not really show obedience to the whole gospel.
I agree with that, Saul. And certainly the African-American church is probably more comfortable in ministering to the community and ministering to felt needs. We believe that the gospel is for now, it's for you. And we have taken that gospel of liberation seriously, even in our journey here in America. I do find that evangelical Christianity today has missed the mark. If you, in so many ways, if you look at, even at the civil rights movement, the evangelical church did not ascribe to it. They did not, in many ways, support it. And a lot of denominations are healing from that now. Thank God for Promise Keepers and how they have raised the issues of racial reconciliation. I believe the evangelical church missed it with the opportunity of AIDS, ministering to AIDS. And finally, we are talking about it, but when we talk about it, we talk about it passionately overseas. When so many of our churches are hurting and our community is hurting right here in America, we are also missing the mark when it comes to immigration. I do not believe that the Bible ever says that immigrants are illegal. That's a man-made term. Yes, we must work within society. We want to be obedient to the laws of society. But when it comes to helping people in need who are at our doorsteps, I believe the church must stand up.
Amen.
And laws are meant to be changed. If laws were never changed in America, African Americans in America would not have the liberties that we have now. You must come against laws that are immoral. We must speak against laws that even talk against our comfort zone. So I think the challenge of the evangelical world today is that we would look at Jesus and say, you know, Jesus dared to touch the lepers. That means we might get a little dirty, that we might risk being labeled or a certain thing. But he dared to touch the lepers and to heal the lepers. Jesus also freed the woman who was caught in adultery, and he liberated her. And his first message in Luke chapter 4 was a message of liberation. And we must be cognizant of that, not only overseas, but at home as well.
Just to follow up, I'm glad you lift up Promise Keepers, and I would lift up InterVarsity as an organization.
Absolutely.
That has taken racial justice seriously in their multi-ethnic, multicultural vision through the past 15 years. If you look at these issues we're taking up here, like AIDS and global poverty and entrepreneurial evangelism, yes, you can read those historic blind spots as because of racism.
Yes.
Because, you know, well, we don't deal with AIDS because that's like a black issue or a sexual immorality issue versus a universal issue or poverty. That's a, you know, a Latino issue or whatever.
The world.
I mean, and so are you satisfied with the level of discourse of racial justice at Urbana 2006?
I was having this conversation this afternoon, actually, and as I stated before, I'm an outsider to Urbana. I have not been here perhaps when you've had your dialogues and your discussions. As an outsider who happens to look through African-American lenses and through multicultural lenses, I applaud Urbana and InterVarsity for the steps that you have taken. As I've said, when most evangelical groups talk about AIDS, they spirit to overseas. Urbana has taken the initiative to talk about it in a very balanced way, domestic initiatives as well as overseas initiatives. When you look at the structure of leadership of Urbana, you see different ethnicities who have decision-making power. The director of programs for Urbana is an African-American female. That probably is unheard of in evangelical ranks today. And when you look at the variety that is on the stage, that is presented publicly, we're singing songs. I have never sang a song in Korean in my life, you know. And I'm singing these songs in Korean, and I'm loving it. Is it a challenge? Yes, it is a challenge. But it's a challenge that I gladly accept. So I applaud Urbana for that.
Yes, yes. It is amazing. It is amazing also that really global issues are being taken seriously. And that this generation is becoming aware that they don't live only in the U.S. and that there is the rest of the world. That is amazing. I mean, to me, being invited from a Latino Mexican perspective into Urbana is really significant. It's really significant. And not because I'm a Christian leader, because I'm just a community practitioner. You see, so they're listening the voice of somebody who is involved with the poor in really the war front, and not somebody who's coming to bring a summary of ideas about the church, but somebody who's representing what is happening. And that's a great privilege. It's a great platform. It's a great opportunity. And the way in which I'm being interviewed by the students on the alleys of this stadium is amazing, because they say, you opened my eyes, and thank you for your stories. It's possible, you see, it's possible to engage. And I say, yes, yes. Urbana is telling you that God is writing stories in the whole world on his transforming powers. And that is amazing.
Yes.
Jen Stuber from the Samaritan Ministry newsletter. I deal with one issue, and that's the rising cost of health care. And interested in how that affects you guys' ministry, what your perspective on it is, how you deal with it biblically, just in general your reaction.
We have several seniors in our congregation and in our community. A lot of seniors, and for them it is definitely an issue. So what we did just a couple of weeks ago is to have various entities like Kaiser Medical, Blue Cross, and different individuals come in and talk with our seniors in a community way. And this was held at a local church, and over 200 or more seniors were there who had questions. It was the first time that they can talk to someone other than standing in a long line or having to go through punch one, punch two. And they're very frustrated. They received guidance and received help. And I think that as a church, we must come alongside of these agencies to provide information for our seniors. We also work very deeply with a university that's a medical university in order to provide, we're working even now, to have a health conference next year so that we can reach not only our seniors, but our children for dental care and for eye exams. And we want these to be free. We're still negotiating. We did this in San Francisco, and it was tremendously successful, and we want to do it in Vallejo as well.
You know, I come from an environment where the big promise it was, if we become democratic, the government will eventually change, because then the people will bring its needs into the government or government people minds, and finally they are going to address them. But that's not the case. You see, the government keeps having its own priorities, and people keep having their own needs. And some of them are very acute, as the lack of health services. which in Mexico go from the very fact that we don't have drinking water. You see, very recently there was a big scandal because the government wanted to impose a new tax on pop drinks. And there was a huge, huge scandal because they said, now what are the poor going to drink? Because Mexico is one of the heaviest consumers of pop drinks in the world. Why is that so? Because we cannot drink the water from the faucet because we're going to die. You see, and we observe that in the budget of expenses of this new government we have, there are reductions to health services and increases expenses or an increasing in the budget for expenses for the army. So we're becoming a country with a better army and with less health. You see, with less education, with less communication. It's terrible. And the church needs to awake to this reality. We need to participate, but not only protesting. That's a way of participation. Not only telling our Congress men and Congress women that they should raise up a voice. Not only that, we need to take action and do something and get people organized to tackle their problems of lacking drinking water, lacking health services, lacking enough doctors. We need to get organized and give a concrete response to those things.